everyone. Welcome to EHS, this week's podcast for the week ending September 12th. I'm Nicola Kuna.
And I'm JP Nadeau.
And we're bringing you the latest stories in environmental health and safety. So I'm going to start off with a story about National Preparedness Month. For those who didn't know, September is National Preparedness Month, and the Federal Emergency Management Agency, also known as FEMA, wants to remind everyone to make disaster preparedness a priority. National Preparedness Month is a reminder that we all need to be ready for disasters and emergencies. September is also the height of hurricane season, so preparing now is even more critical for businesses in the southeast. Fortunately, there were no tropical cyclones active in the Atlantic Ocean on September 7th, according to the National Hurricane Center. But disasters are occurring more frequently and are larger and more complex, according to FEMA, which also reported that four tropical cyclones already have formed this summer. So FEMA's Ready campaign is promoting a Be Disaster Aware, Take Action to Prepare theme for National Preparedness Month this year. It highlights specific actions individuals and groups can take to prepare for an emergency with the following themes. So week one, how to reconnect with family after a disaster. Week two is how to plan for specific needs before a disaster. Week three is how to build an emergency kit. And week four is how to practice for an emergency. These may sound simple, but a national FEMA survey earlier this year indicated that half of Americans haven't discussed or developed an emergency plan. Last week on the podcast, JP covered a great story on how to improve workplace safety in 30 minutes to be better prepared for emergencies, and you can find a link to those tips in our resource section. JP, I think you have a story on BLS.
That's right, Nicholas. So a story coming out of Washington. And according to some preliminary data that was released on September 11th by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, they've recorded that the number and rate of workers killed on the job in 2013 has declined from the numbers seen in 2012. So that's good news. So a preliminary total of 4,405 fatal work injuries occurred in 2013, resulting in a rate of 3.2 deaths per 100,000 full-time equivalent workers. Now, compared that to back in 2012, the final fatal work injury count and rate were 4,628 and 3.4, respectively. So, nice to see a little bit of a decline in those numbers. So, it's important to remember these stats are only preliminary right now, as BLS is going to release the final data in the spring of 2015 with the 2013 data revised. And over the past 5 years, they've seen usually an average of about 165 cases added to the preliminary account. So we may see that number go up a bit.
What are the highlights of the preliminary data?
So among the preliminary data, some of the highlights are there were 3,929 fatal work injuries that occurred in private industry. And that's the lowest total since the Bureau of Labor Statistics began collecting this data more than 20 years ago. So that's a really great stat. Some other interesting points, fatal work injuries among Hispanic or Latino workers increased 7% between 2012 and 2013. Transportation-related incidents, they accounted for 40% of all fatal work injuries, but declined in 2013, so that's good. And one out of six fatal work injuries was the result of violence, including suicide and homicide. So another interesting stat, I wouldn't have thought that myself. So definitely some interesting information coming out of this preliminary data. So, Nicola, you've got a story about NIOSH for us.
Yes, so an article on EHS Today revealed that the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, NIOSH, estimates 8 million U.S. healthcare workers are potentially exposed to hazardous drugs in the workplace. So healthcare workers who prepare or give hazardous drugs to patients, such as those that are used for cancer therapy, as well as any support staff, may face individual health risks when exposed to these drugs. The NIOSH list of antineoplastic and other hazardous drugs in healthcare settings 2014 is the latest version of the hazardous drug list first published by NIOSH in 2004. So hazardous drugs on the list include ones that are used for cancer chemotherapy, antiviral drugs, hormones, some bioengineered drugs, and other drugs. And millions of American workers in healthcare facilities may come into contact with these drugs that are capable of causing serious health effects such as cancer, fertility problems, and organ damage, according to NIOSH Director John Howard. And this list is important to help workers become aware of the hazards that certain drugs pose so they can take the necessary steps to protect themselves from exposure while they're doing their jobs. The current list is comprised of drugs that NIOSH continuously reviews according to the criteria in the NIOSH definition of a hazardous drug. The latest version of the list includes 27 drugs not found on previous lists and 12 drugs that were removed that did not remove NIOSH's criteria. NIOSH made previous updates to the list in 2012 and 2010. The new document provides healthcare organizations with information on how to generate a list of hazardous drugs specific to their workplaces, as well as how to evaluate the hazard potential of a drug. NIOSH also offers an alert that provides more information and recommendations on methods and personal protective equipment to minimize exposure to these drugs. And you can find the list of hazardous drugs and the recommendations on how healthcare workers can protect themselves in our resources section below. JP, I think you have a story for us in rail safety.
Yeah, that's right. We've got a story coming out of Hartford, Connecticut. So after a series of high-profile incidents in recent years in the rail industry, two U.S. senators have unveiled a wide-ranging legislation aimed at improving rail safety. So on September 7th, Senators Richard Blumenthal and Charles Schumer announced plans to introduce a bill intended to strengthen safety policies in the wake of 2013 Metro North Railroad incidents near the Bronx in New York City and near Bridgeport, Connecticut.
What specifics does the bill address?
So the bill is going to call for a number of improvements. So these are going to be things like bolstering federal oversight by increasing funding for the Federal Railroad Administration's safety and operations work. It's going to aim to increase civil penalties for railroad operators that neglect safety. It's going to require enhanced inspection practices by commuter railroads. It's going to call for increased enforcement of speed restrictions. So it's going to aim to provide resources for passenger and commuter railroads in their efforts to implement technologies such as positive train control. And it's going to require safer operating procedures for transportation of crude oil and flammable liquids. So yeah, so many of the items listed in the bill are going to follow recommendations found in the FRA's Operation Deep Dive report that assessed Metro North's safety policies. So it's good to see we've got some wheels in motion to improve rail safety. I know this bill specifically addresses a couple of incidents that happened in the U.S., but I know here in Canada we recently had the Lac-Mégantic incident that was real tragic as well. Good to see steps being made in the right direction to improve rail safety on both sides of the border.
For sure. It sounds like this bill is definitely moving in the right direction, as you said. So just a quick update from OSHA. A proposed OSHA rule that would update the permissible exposure limit for beryllium is under review by the Office of Management and Budget. OMB's Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs received the rule September 4th, and reviews, which are required in many cases before OSHA can publish a rule, are limited to 90 days, but they can be extended. Details of the proposal, which has been in the works for more than a decade, have not yet been made public. In a 2002 request for information, OSHA stated that its current beryllium limit may not be adequate to protect workers from the hazardous metal and noted that the Department of Energy in 1999 set an action level to trigger control measures for its employees.
So what are some of the effects from exposure to beryllium?
Well, exposure to beryllium can lead to a variety of diseases, including chronic and acute beryllium disease, lung cancer, and diseases of the skin. So let's hope some progress is made with this final rule so that the safety of everyone who comes into contact with beryllium can be improved. And I think that's it for the week. We hope you enjoyed this week's stories, and we'll talk to you next week.
Have a safe week, everyone.